Mind, action. In the prior hourly treatment, seeing was focused on as a very important item to make sure that we are seeing the truth. The first quote in the textbook addresses what we're doing with our time and are we seeking truth? And the second quote was from Shakespeare about what we think has a direct impact on what we see. To me, that would indicate that we should always be striving for seeing the truth, and we should always be making sure that we filter out any false path that we're on, which is any path that is not seeking truth. Moments are the first topic that should be attacked because it is so easy to waste the moment. Mary Baker Eddy states that that is the most likely place that makes the difference between success and failure. That is, how we use the moments. Because they happen all day long. And they accumulate and can be very useful if they are directed where they need to be productive. We have to always be viewing everything through the five spiritual senses, which very quickly are: one, spiritual seeing, which is spiritual discernment; two, spiritual hearing, which is spiritual understanding; three, spiritual feeling, divine consciousness; four, spiritual smell, intuition of character; five, spiritual taste, relish of truth. Mary Baker Eddy gives this text right after she defines those five, and this is from Richard Oakes' book called The Blue Book, page 222. Abide in the 91st Psalm and know that such abiding is treatment and protection. There is nothing that can make laws or influence you. There is but one mind, and that is love. Do not give life to evil by attaching it to a person or thing. It cannot live without a body. Man is immortal, one. There is but one infinite manifestation. No error can attach itself to man, and why deceive ourselves by thinking it can do so? Every manifestation of life is ever-present and omnipresent, good, and this carries within itself all healing, sustaining. Know that the kingdom of heaven is within you, and this is your armor. If a person has a belief of consumption, the treatment should go far enough to destroy or uncover the belief in the reality of sexuality and the existence of material creative organs. Man is not a creator. He does not even assist in creation. The supposition that he does, or that any of the conditions or supposed facts that pertain to the subject of sex are true, is purely fictitious, a fragment of dream from which we're awakening. If one clicks the button on the website under recommended links that is entitled Five Spiritual Senses, there are a total of six pages from 222 to 227, which are the text from the Blue Book on this topic. Before any action is taken, we need to be sure that we are viewing the topic through the spiritual senses. This will eliminate many of the mistakes that otherwise would be made. Frederick L. Rawson is one of the greatest geniuses of Christian Science, and he states that our primary goal should be to make other people happy. Obviously, healing is involved in one of those activities, but we must remember that even though we may develop the capacity to heal a particular problem, that does not heal the individual to the degree that it would make them immune from any other sin, sickness, disease, or death. That can only be done if the individual takes up the pursuit of the serious study of Christian Science, and particularly the system of divine metaphysics, and that entails continuous deep study of the textbook. And of course, there are 16 other books written by Mary Baker Eddy, and she states that only by understanding those 16 books can we more thoroughly understand the textbook. She wrote all of these books, and yet if one searches, they will find that the same topic was never covered in the same way, but from a different angle and in a different degree of completeness. So there is never duplicate ideas. Only the same idea, if it is at all covered, from a different perspective to give us a more comprehensive understanding. Mr. Rawson states that the primary thing that we're always working on is to dispel the belief that there is life, truth, and intelligence in matter, or mortal mind, because those are the two things that are always presenting themselves as real when in fact they are the opposite. What we see is visible, but the real cause of everything that is real is not visible. It is the qualities of God which bring those about. And if they are good things, then they are really from God. If they are evil, then we must flip them to realize that the real true nature is not evil, but that there is a pearl of great wisdom beneath the surface. And that's what we need to dig to uncover and experience. So the goal is always to be looking for the pearl of great wisdom about whatever the topic is that is of interest to us at the moment. It is always in existence, and everything that is true has always been true. As has been stated, there is nothing new under the sun. It is only new to us. Therefore, the revelation of the truth is what we are seeking, not the discovery of new truth. One of Mary Baker Eddy's most advanced students wanted to reveal the system of divine metaphysics back in the early 1900s, and she said, "Put it away, don't think about it, don't discuss it with anyone, because the population has to grow in their understanding of God and man and the relationship thereto before they can really understand or appreciate that there is a divine system of divine metaphysics which explains everything." And you will note on page 146 in her final edition of Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures, she states this: "Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. Keeping in mind that disease is anything that is discordant, dis-ease, think of it as the two words. So any form of sin, sickness, disease, or even death is all classified as disease. Now on page 330, she gives us another clue. She says, when the 32 planks of the platform is understood and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated. The following 11 pages following that statement from 330 to 340 include the 32 planks to which she refers. She also made the statement elsewhere that she has hidden it, so that if she hides it any more, it will never be found. Now, she did this purposely because she did not feel the population was ready for the discovery at that time, and that the population had to grow in the understanding before it would unfold for each one of them individually. Now, this same thing is true of the Bible. The spiritual inspiration of the Bible is hidden. And it took her 2,000 years later to reveal the spiritual translation of the Bible. I invested a few thousand dollars over a period of 10 or 15 years wherein I was seeking the system. And I discovered that the ones that were deemed to be Bible scholars didn't know the first thing about the spiritual nature of the Bible. They were translating it strictly from a literal viewpoint. Those that try to explain some of the Bible stories, such as the one about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego being thrown into the fiery furnace, and other such stories, are always viewed upon them from a material standpoint. And they can never be understood unless one is viewing them from a spiritual standpoint. There is a very definite message in everything in the Bible. And the question is, are we viewing it by looking through the correct lens, which is the lens of spirit? And if we do, then we will either be finding the real truth, or we will be realizing that it is false and we need to flip it, and it is only a reminder that we need to be flipping it and analyzing the opposite. Much truth is defined by flipping the opposite, because it comes to us as an opposite. Whenever there is a very important truth, there will always be tremendous opposition to it. But we must take that as part of the experience of learning the truth. The more important a truth is, the stronger will be the opposition of so-called mortal mind to accept it. And the more comprehensive it is, the more deceitful will be the opposite, which is the evil, to try to deceive. Evil is really fairly easy to recognize because it sticks to just a few operatives. For example, it will always try to deceive and cover up the truth because it wants to be the truth. So it wants everyone to believe the evil as true. In fact, one of the intelligence agencies for the U.S. government, which is the largest one, CIA, they teach their employees how to cheat, steal, and lie. And they have a program called Operation Mockingbird. And the purpose of that program is to deceive the population so that they will believe what is a lie to be the truth. And the directors of that agency have stated the progress over the years. And at one point they said, we now control the media, and therefore it will be easier to deceive the people, because they know that repetition is one of the key elements of deception. If one is repeating a lie repetitively, sooner or later the human mind will accept it as being truth. We have to think of that being equally valuable for training the human thought to accept truth, for it has been educated to accept a lie. One of the very first things that the human brain is taught is that it is a sinner. And time after time, it tries to prove that that is true, because there will be enticements to sin. Thinking and trying to deceive people to believe that taking the shortcut is always the way to go. But the shortcut is the evil way, and the path that it follows is the path of evil, not the path of truth. It appears that everyone that pursues the path of truth is sooner or later overtaken in some fashion, at least on a temporary scale, to take that shortcut. But it always ends in failure. And often we have to go through those failures before we're ready to give it up and finally pursue the only real path, which is the path of truth. Mary Baker Eddy has stated that she knows of no one, literally, that has ever been able to pursue the path of truth unless they have gone through multiple trials and tribulations. Even if they appear to have an intent, a serious pursuit of the path of truth. We are bombarded, as she has stated in Science and Health, all day long with temptations of evil. A simple temptation to waste the moment is a path of evil. We have to consciously make the effort not to accept any of these diversions. In time management, one is taught that whenever they have any projects to do, they should always be evaluated on the basis of value, and that the focus of their prime time should be devoted only to the highest value projects. But yet, the temptation of diversion, of cleaning up this little thing or that little thing, which of course defers the focus on the main project, that those diversions seem to be important, but in fact they are of little value and in many cases should never even be pursued. The schedule should be constantly monitored to make sure that the time is devoted to the highest value project. And it really boils down to learning more about God, learning more about man, and learning about the relationship between God and man. And this is as stated in Genesis chapter 1. And at the end of the story of the spiritual creation, which begins at the beginning of chapter 1 of Genesis and ends on verse 3 of chapter 2 of Genesis, we must study that on a regular basis to keep our thought in line, to know that God did create man in his image and likeness. Now, Mary Baker Eddy explains that that's not really a creation, but a revelation. And instead of really meaning that it is in the beginning, she interprets that to mean that it is in the only creation that there is. She explains Genesis very thoroughly in chapter 15 of Science and Health, the textbook, and that is entitled Genesis. Of course, that means the beginning. In very advanced courses I've taken in various topics that related to my business, the very best of the instructors have always referred to the basics. They say, let's go back to the basics. In other words, we have to keep reminding ourselves of the foundation of anything we're studying, because it is so easy to be distracted in the complexities that we lose the concept of the foundation. And yet the foundation is the only reason that we can ever get to the more complex areas. So we must always keep the foundation clear. Advanced mathematicians, when they have an error, in other words, some complex mathematical formula that did not bring them the correct answer, they always go back to the beginning and check all of their calculations from start to finish. And their thesis, their postulates, anything at all that has to do with getting to the end result. The same in the system of divine metaphysics. There are seven synonymous terms for God, and each one must be understood, which is, of course, a continuing unfoldment, because each level of advancement that we attain reveals more of the truth about what we're studying. No one can just open up a textbook about God and say, okay, this is it, because the door is open to further revelation, and that is based on your level of understanding. On pages 115 and 116 of the textbook, it enumerates four levels of understanding. Three of them are called mortal mind, and one of them is called immortal mind. And once you get up into the level of immortal mind, there is no finale, because God is infinite. As our understanding grows, our acceptance of a greater level is then right in front of us, and we are given the opportunity to grow. Therefore, we have to understand is that there is no limit to the understanding, because we are dealing with the infinitude. And we can only deal with the level where we are at the moment. And when we understand that better than we did previously, then we are ready to go up to a little bit higher degree. Also, we must understand that when it states in that statement about the system of divine metaphysics, and especially on page 330, where she says that the letter and the spirit will bear witness, we must appreciate how important the spirit is. For there is more nurturing required to understand the Spirit. We actually have to transform our life in every dimension to be living a life of giving. And of course, a belief in matter is one that believes that there is a limited amount of everything that exists. That's what matter is, defining something in material terms, which includes automatically limitation. There is nothing in the material world that is infinite, because the material world is unreal. And it is, by definition, finite. And therefore, its opposite, which is spirit, is infinite, which is the opposite of finite. In order to even think about studying the Spirit, we have to be humble to the degree of which Einstein referred to when he said, curiosity has its own reason for existing. Never stop questioning. When we stop questioning, that means we think we know it all. And when we think we know it all, we are limiting ourselves to the truth. No one knows it all, because it has no limitation. Mary Baker Eddy coined the phrase, infinite progression is concrete being. That merely means that if we are on the path of infinite progression, we are striving for a more complete understanding of the truth. There is no end. It is only a higher degree that we are striving for. The word compound is very important in this respect. Or should I say the functioning of compounding? For what that means is that we are adding to what was previously a foundation, and it gives us a higher foundation supporting the further development in consciousness. And remember, the kingdom of God is within. It's not something out there. So all we're doing is exploring more within individual consciousness. I indicated that we have to transform ourselves into a life of giving, because the overall belief is that we exist in matter and are controlled by a mortal mind. That, of course, is the belief that we are of the heritage of Adam and Eve. But we must insist on jumping over the bridge to get our feet more secure in the foundation of truth, which is spirit instead of matter. We can never be secure in matter. It doesn't matter how much money anyone has, or how many houses or cars or ounces of gold or anything else. It can always come to an end because it is matter. What can never come to an end is what is spirit. And of course, spirit is mental. Matter is physical. So everything physical always has a finite characteristic. But what we're trying to establish is a spiritual foundation which has no finite definition or restrictions in any way, shape, or form. It is open to infinite development, and no one can take it away. With every little bit of concrete understanding, it adds to a foundation that is permanent. And this, of course, is why the government is totally against the system of divine metaphysics and Christian Science and God and man, the real man, because it wants everyone to believe that everything is limited and that the only real source of anything is the government. So they try to trick us into believing that we do not have the capacity to be independent of a government that controls us. And that's why they try to have ownership of all of the media, so that it can continue to repeat error upon error, lie upon lie, cheating, stealing, compounded upon each other. In 325 AD, there was a council of the churches and the government called the Council of Nicaea. And because Christianity was being so widely accepted, the governments and the churches, both of which were corrupt from the core, realized that their life was limited because they were both focused on matter and mortal mind and possession and control and those kinds of things. Whereas the spiritual growth of someone who believes in Christianity and studies it in an effort to understand it better is studying how to become independent of any other source than their own ability to understand more about themselves being the image and likeness of God. And of course, God has no limitation whatsoever. So they had this meeting, and the result of the meeting was they decided that, first of all, they had to define Jesus Christ as being God. Now, Jesus made it very clear in the Bible in many different passages that he was not God, but he was the Son of God, the Son, not just a Son, but the Son. Just like Mary Baker Eddy is the daughter of God. No one else can take her place. No one else can take the place of Jesus Christ. As a matter of fact, in Christian Science, we term Jesus as being Christ Jesus. Christ being the title because he was the clearest example of the Christ consciousness. And the Christ consciousness is really the consciousness of God. So he represented the Son by emulating the Father, which is God, and Mary Baker Eddy emulated the daughter of God by bringing forth the spiritual qualities most attributed to the female. In fact, all of those around her called her mother for many, many years, until she finally realized that she had to change it because that was giving her a personality, and she wanted to make sure they understood that it was the truth that was really leading and not a human person. And to further that, she never appeared in the churches to preach. Instead, she had a committee that developed a Bible lesson. And the Bible Lesson Committee indicated what they should read every Sunday. And part of the program was on Wednesday, the first reader of the church would make up a lesson from the Bible and Science and Health with correlative passages, and that would be the topic to be read. So in every church, it was unique based on the individual that was the reader who developed it in their level of understanding. And on Wednesday, there was time devoted for giving testimonies. so that those in the church that had a healing could relate it for the inspiration for others. And Mary Baker Eddy has indicated multiple times that churches had one function, and that was to initiate the new individual as an introduction to Christian Science. And once one had their feet on the ground with enough understanding to work independently, that the church no longer served a function. She did not want there to be a bureaucracy, and she put very strict provisions in the manual of the First Church of Christ Sinus in Boston, Massachusetts, which was the manual just for that one location. And in it, she states very clearly that all of the various departments, such as educating others, having a class to train teachers to teach others, everything that had any kind of an outreach to the branches were to be self-terminating because they required her personal signature before they could continue. And her personal approval had to be obtained in order to have any new individual a part of the board of directors. So each of these areas are self-terminating. And if one reads the manual with their eyes open, they will realize that that's exactly what the manual states, and that they are to have no control over the branch churches. And yet, that's exactly what they did as soon as she passed on, is they accelerated and tightened up the control instead of letting go. And they tried to control what everyone read by having a category of authorized literature. And if it wasn't authorized, you weren't supposed to touch it. You weren't supposed to look at it, think about it, or even be curious about it. And of course, that is a form of communism, total totalitarianism, which is the opposite of Christian Science. And the result, after she passed on, is very clear. It went to the fastest growing and widest reaching religious movement in all history to about 5% of the number of population and churches and practitioners and teachers that it had at the peak. And that's because they did everything to destroy it. Obviously, they didn't realize what they were doing, but they made the same mistake as everyone does when they're leading down the wrong path, and that is they are using self-will and they're blind to the truth. A few of Mary Baker Eddy's students that lived with her had a desire to go to the local church there in Concord, New Hampshire. And she said, if you feel you have a need to do it, go ahead and go. And that was telling Mary Baker Eddy that they were not at the level to be standing on their own. There is no great science, even in the physical sciences, that has any kind of institution that tries to control everybody in the science. There are no churches for mathematics, chemistry, physics, architecture, rocket science, any of the great sciences. Einstein made these statements about Mary Baker Eddy and Christian Science. Blessed art thou, because everything that really is in this book. Science without religion is lame. Religion without science is blind. Imagine a woman 80 years ago discovered this. He had been working his whole life. on discovering the things that she had discovered many decades before, and he was not aware of it until his friend Dr. Underwood enlightened him. And in the 1940s, the U.S. had a commission called the Atomic Energy Commission, where they were trying to develop the atom bomb. And for some reason, Einstein was not included, but his friend, Dr. Underwood, was. And everyone on that committee passed on from radiation except for his friend, Dr. Underwood. And when Einstein inquired about it, he said, "How is it that everyone else passed on, but you're alive?" He said, "Because I'm a student of Mary Baker Eddy and her discovery of Christian Science." So that really awakened Einstein, and so then he became a very astute student of Christian Science. I touched on this, but I will expand it a little bit right now about the spirit. If anyone does an in-depth examination of Christ Jesus, and of course this means really in-depth, because he gave us 41 parables, and we have the spiritual translation of all of those, and it is many hundreds of pages, and his healings, how he conducted himself, how he treated his relationship with his disciples, everything at all about him. And you're not going to find it reading books of most authors. You have to go to the original source documents. In other words, the Bible. And you need to use an interlinear dictionary so that you can see what the original words were and what they mean in English. Because, for example, the word God is in the Bible, but is sourced from a variety of root words. Genesis 1 uses a root word that is Elohim. Genesis 2, beginning on verse 4, uses a word that is Jehovah. They are two totally different characters. Elohim is the one we want to be utilizing as what we translate as God. The other one is a fake. Genesis 1 through verse 3 of Genesis 2 is the real one. Genesis 4 and onward, peppered throughout most of the Bible, is the fake one. As stated previously, Frederick L. Rawson indicated that our purpose on this earth is to make other people happy. What did Jesus spend his life doing? Making other people happy. He was instructing them. He was healing them. He never spoke a foul word about anyone, anytime, other than he defined evil as being something that should be behind him. Get behind me, Satan. He didn't argue with evil. He simply said, "Get behind me." And when he was tempted by a so-called devil, when he came out of the 40 days and 40 nights in the desert before he began his ministry, every time the devil would try to tempt him with something, he didn't argue with him. He would give him the truth. The same with Mary Baker Eddy. They would attack her in the various media. She wouldn't argue with him. She would simply propound the truth, which was the opposite of what they were trying to portray her to be. And that's the same way evil works right now. When there is a good person doing wonderful things, they will try to lie and repeat the lies and try to get people to believe the lie just like Project Mockingbird was all about. When everyone believes the lie to be the truth, we've accomplished our goal in Project Mockingbird. So, number one, they lie about the truth. Number two, they disparage the character. Number three, they create distractions. Those are three of the key elements. And if you think about everything that has happened in the last 8 years in the U.S., that's exactly what they've done to President Trump. And what did President Trump do? He faced every one of them and proved that they were false. And when he had proven that they were false, then they were arrested, taken to Gitmo, and they've been executed, or they're being held for a tribunal. So they destroyed themselves, but he had to expose them. And that's why he went through all of these things that he could have escaped. You know, he didn't have to. He had the authority that he could have just had them arrested in the beginning. But he wanted to expose them to the public. And that's what he did. And that's why they hate him, because he has faced them in every single thing. When they tried to kill him in Butler, Pennsylvania, what did he do? He immediately arranged to go back there and give another rally at the same location. When they sued him, he could have gotten out of it because everything they were doing was illegal. No, he used their tools to expose them that they were wrong. In every case, he faced it and he proved that evil was wrong, every single one. They don't know how to deal with him. He's like another John. They'd like to send him to an island of Patmos because they can't kill him. They can't get rid of him. He is a messenger chosen for our day. He has the business background to be able to do what no one else can do. He has said that he worked his whole life for this day, because everything he did, he had the same kind of problems. He was attacked. They did everything to try to prevent him from putting up these wonderful, beautiful buildings and golf courses that are the most premium around the whole world. There's not another name that compares to the name of Trump for excellence. They can't stand it. They being evil. So those are the things that evil does. That's the way it operates. So that gives us the tools to be able to recognize it early in the game. The intelligence agencies have been attacking Russia. Russia, Russia, Russia. Why? Because Russia is one of the greatest nations in the whole world. And they're trying to lie about it being the worst. Putin is one of the greatest leaders of all time. They're trying to lie about him, saying that he is evil. If you want to start a new Christian church, the easiest place to do it is in Russia. He is promoting Christianity. What has he done in Ukraine? He has gotten rid of a lot of the Nazis, the bioweapon laboratories, the child trafficking, the child Satanism, and slavery, the money laundering he has discovered. And everyone thinks that he is there aggressively attacking innocent Ukraine. Ukraine has been used as the country for the center of corruption of the entire world. And he, Zelensky, has been chosen as the puppet. His profession is an actor, just like the one playing Biden. He's an actor. And who better to get someone to do what they want is an actor. They are puppets. They're given a part to play, and that's what they do. There's no genuine integrity beneath an actor. They are playing a part. They know it, but they don't want anyone else to know it. They want everyone else to believe it as a true person. That's exactly what the movies are all about. If you ever went to one of the studios, Universal Studios is one of the first ones that started this, where they show you how they do all of these tricks when they make a movie. I took that tour when I was about 16 years old. I couldn't believe it. When I came out of there, I said, "Dad and Mom, I don't want to ever watch a movie again because I can see it's all fake. I've been tricked." I remember it as if it was yesterday. Soon after television was introduced to the public, back in the early 1950s, the first thing that the corporations did was to create subliminal advertising. If you're not familiar with what that means, it refers to having something flash at a high speed to input into one's consciousness something that they want to, the promoter wants to do to influence your actions. It's totally unconscious. You don't see it because of the speed of the flash, but your consciousness sees it and it goes into your consciousness. And it will guide your opinion about something. And of course, if they repeat it, the more they repeat it, the easier it is for your consciousness to accept it as being true. And they've been using subliminal advertising ever since they've had video available on television. Now, I don't know about movies. I don't know about movies. But I know in television, of course, which is not even popular anymore, except for the cable stations, but so much is available on the internet that the normal media is almost extinct, especially since the public has become wise to the fact that they are promoting evil. They're promoting lies, cheating, and stealing. The head of Congress for many, many years was one of the leaders in creating the fabricated lies for the media. And that individual would take a target, usually it was a particular individual, and they would create lies about that individual. Suppose it was someone that was up for being appointed to the Supreme Court, for example, or any important position, vice president, president, anything that was an important position with a lot of power over other people. And they would make up lies, totally fabricated. And then they would give it to the media. The media would repeat it, and they say, from one of their verifiable sources, they have discovered this. And then they would tell the lie. Then the one who fabricated the lie, the one that was ahead of Congress, they would use the media as their source for the authority. And so it was just a three-sixty-degree circle. The one that created it would use the media as the authority, when in fact, the one that lied about it in the beginning was the whole source of the lie. So the public is now awake to the point that they are not believing the media. And so the media has gone down, 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 down. It's crashed. They've been self-destroying because they've been lying so much and no one believes them. And of course, this is the last thing that the intelligence communities want to happen, because then they will be destroyed, because they will be discovered that they are telling nothing but lies. Whenever we do any studying, we want to always give credit to whomever we are learning from. It's good to do it when you learn something at the moment. Thank you for this idea. If you learn something from a website, you should express gratitude. If it's one that accepts donations, you should make a donation to it. Everything costs money to operate, and if you're gaining something, you should try to consciously be sure to give something back. Most people give nothing to anyone. The most popular word in the world is free. Free. Everybody wants something free. They don't realize that if they were the one giving it out and nobody appreciated it, they may stop giving it out. Everyone appreciates things in words, but in actions, doesn't mean a thing because they don't do anything about it. They don't give anything. We have thousands and thousands of people that visit our website. Hardly anyone gives anything. They will send us messages. They will call us and tell us how much they appreciate this, that, and the other. Or they'll send an email. They must think we can pay our programmers by just thanking them. But our programmers need to buy food. They need to pay for their housing. They need to buy clothes once in a while. They need to buy a way to transport, you know, buy gas for their car and maintain it and so forth. There's money involved in living by paying the expenses for food, shelter, and clothing. Most people don't give it another thought. I talked to somebody that I've known for a couple of decades, not long ago, and I hadn't talked to him in several years, hadn't had a reason to, and he has a Christian Science website, but he sells everything. And so I said, "Do you ever visit our website?" He said, "I'm on it all the time." He said, "I think I've downloaded everything you have." And we've got thousands and thousands of pages and hundreds of MP3s and so forth and some videos. He said, "Yeah, I think I've downloaded everything you have." He said, "My wife and I are always listening to something from your website. We have something on all day long." I said, "Well, thanks. I just was wondering." And then I said goodbye, wished him well. About 2 weeks later, he called us. And he said, "I'm really having a tough time. And I'm wondering if the Institute could donate any money to us." He was getting thousands and tens of thousands, really, of dollars of products from us for free. Yeah, we've got tens of thousands of dollars of products. And we give it away all free. And he was taking it. He thought he appreciated it. He uses words. He listens to it. He lets it guide him. He's growing from it, supposedly. But he doesn't donate a single penny. We've never received a donation from him. Never. Almost everybody is the same way. Almost everyone. Therefore, we who are committed to the Institute, we pay for everything out of our own pockets. We pay for all the programmers, everything, the equipment. To do this, we have to have a high-speed scanner, high-speed printer, and so forth. We have one that does 50 pages a minute on both sides, duplex. So we can put out 100 pages a minute. We can take a 500-page book and have it out in 10 minutes. We need the equipment. We have many computers, many screens. I use multiple large 55-inch screens. And I have 3 computers. They must think that everything is free. They must think we get everything free. I donate my time. Nobody here takes a salary. Everybody's a volunteer. So if you don't become an individual with a life of giving, don't expect to be successful in healing, because you can't do it. People work years on trying to heal something, and they can't figure out why they're not getting the healing. They don't have it in their heart. They don't believe in the golden rule. They love to receive it, but they don't want to give anything. Until you become a giver, you're not going to have a happy life. You cannot. Because the greatest joy in the world is to see other people benefit from what you give them. And when you can do it anonymously, that is when the feeling of satisfaction is the greatest. The joy that others receive from what you give is the greatest feeling in the world. And don't be like some of the people that have been very wealthy in the past, and they will give millions, tens of millions, $50 million to put up a building. But they want their name on that building. One of the wealthiest men in the U.S. back about 1900 put up many libraries and buildings and universities in here and in Europe, but his name was on every one, every single one. One of the most popular authors, It's a mix between fiction and nonfiction. I mean, it basically is a novel, but it's based on, you know, the documentary evidence about what he writes. Very popular. And he receives millions of dollars every time he publishes a book. He lives in a very modest home in a very remote area of the United States. He and his wife are basically in solitude in where they live and how they live their life. Modest life. Very happy. As soon as he gets a check, he stops whatever he's doing and he works on giving it away. He calls universities and nonprofit organizations and whatever until he gets it all, until he gives it all away. He doesn't need any money, well, almost none, because he's very modest in the way he lives his life. He feels he can be much more creative if he doesn't have to think about money. And so he gets rid of it. I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't have any more than a few million dollars to his name. But he's probably earned hundreds of millions. I don't know what he has. It's not my business, and he's never mentioned it in the documentary that I saw about him. So I don't know. Money is not evil. It's how we think about it that's evil. If we have it because we are in the process of utilizing for the benefit of humanity, that is wonderful. And that is what the use of money should be. Strictly a medium of exchange to use it for good, for the benefit of all humanity. That's the purpose. Same as a gun. A gun is not evil. Yeah, sure, it can kill someone if it's got somebody pulling the trigger and aiming it at someone to destroy them. But it's not the gun that is evil. It's only a tool. The Bible is only a tool. If we don't use it, we can't gain anything from it. Same with all of Mary Baker Eddy's writings. If we don't use it, we're not going to gain anything from it. And if we don't live the life of giving, we're almost guaranteeing that we are limiting tremendously what we can gain from it. Study the life of Mary Baker Eddy. Giving, giving, giving. She was a wealthy woman, but she kept giving, giving, giving. She gave all the land to the Mother Church, and it has some of the most valuable property in Boston. She gave it all. She would pay for the repair or the building of a new street in the city where she lived. It was in need, and so she would do it. If we don't gain the understanding to realize the value of giving, we are limiting from ground zero our future success in healing. Guaranteed. If you study what we say about how to heal, we have one of our links that says heal everything. Another one that says how Christian Science heals. We make it very clear. If you want to continue ignoring it, that is up to you. And we caution against giving money to organizations. Almost every organization, even the Red Cross, is corrupt. Didn't used to be. When Clara Barton founded the American Red Cross, it was one of the greatest things anybody could have done. Unfortunately, the people that don't have anything to do with the war want to bring the U.S. to war out of greed and control. It's not their sons that are out there fighting on the front line and get their arms shot off or get a bomb that totally wipes them out. No. No, it's other people's sons that get it. Yeah, they want to go to war right now with other people's bodies. They want to give away money, other people's money. They want to control other people. Do they want to be controlled? Nope. Not a one of them. They want to control other people. These are all the opposite of a life of giving. Did Jesus want to control other people? Or did he want to inspire them? Whose feet did he wash? The very ones that became traitors. He washed all their feet. Do you wash anyone's feet? Back in those days, washing one's feet is probably considered the most humble thing you could do. Because they were all wearing open sandals and they were walking on dirt roads and, you know, they were probably very dirty at the end of every day. And when he went to visit Simon, which is where Mary Magdalene showed up to wash Jesus' feet, even Simon did not think about washing his guest's feet. You know, he had servants he could have had it done, but he didn't even think about it. He was thinking about himself. He was thinking about the pride and glory of having this man that everybody was talking about as a guest in his house. And when Mary Magdalene came, he said, "What is she doing here? Who let her in?" And yet she was the most worthy one to be there, because she was subservient by giving to Jesus. When you give, money is important. But think about your whole self. We have 1,440 minutes a day. How much are we going to devote to giving? How many minutes out of that 1,440 are we going to give to God to further our understanding of who God is, what God is, and what man is, and the relationship? Are we giving anything? Are we reading 30 minutes a day, 15 minutes a day? Nothing? Most people read nothing. If somebody reads for an hour, they think they've done, boy, that was wonderful stuff they did. Well, that's a C student. Are you a sheep? That's definitely a C student or below. Richard Strain was at the end of his rope. He didn't know what to do. He's an author listed on our website. So he went to a practitioner and poured out his woes. He said, "I don't know what to do. I'm just going around in a circle. I get home at midnight. I leave at 6 in the morning. I'm exhausted. What do I do?" She said, "Well, when are you studying?" He was silent. He was silent. "Oh, am I supposed to be studying?" He's probably thinking to himself. "Oh, really? I never thought of that. Gee, I'm supposed to be having that in my schedule of 18 hours. What am I going to cut out of my schedule? Eating? Transportation? I can't cut any work out of it. I have to work 18 hours. She said, "If you're not studying 5 hours a day, you're never going to get anywhere." So that really gave him a dilemma. So it was 5 hours or nothing. Nothing meaning he was going to get nowhere. He couldn't just go there as an appointment and give her the problem and then walk out and expect her to solve it and then send her a check. That was not an option. She didn't talk about being interested in that at all. She delegated it back to him. If you're not studying 5 hours a day, you're not going to make the progress you need to make to work out of the hole that you're in. Period. So she let him just sit there and mull it over. She said nothing. Finally, he said, okay, I'm going to do it. By the end of the week, his life had improved so much that he was able to study 5 hours a day, and he didn't have a problem doing that. And it wasn't long after he was studying 5 hours a day that he dug himself out of the hole and was invited to churches to give talks. But he had to take the step. He had to realize he had to give. He had to give 5 hours a day. You know, that's 300 minutes. Out of the 1,440. So he had to give something over 20%. A C student, they can get by with 144 minutes, 2 hours and 14 minutes, or 2 hours and 24 minutes. That's a C student. Well, he went to a B level. He gave twice that. Do you want to be an A level? You better be talking three times that. You better be talking 30%. You make $100 with every paycheck. You want to be an A-plus student? You better be given $30. If you make $1 million with every paycheck, you better be giving $333,000. Doesn't matter how much you make, it's how much you give that matters. Jesus said the gal that gave two mites gave more than everyone else because she gave all she had. Now, that was the only way she knew to give, was to give it to the church. But as I've said, most institutions are corrupt, and that includes churches. And that includes the Christian Science Church. I used to be a very generous giver to the Mother Church until one day I actually read the manual without any bias. I read the words that were there and I said, my gosh, they're not supposed to be controlling the church that I attend. They're not supposed to be controlling what I read, this authorized literature garbage. They're not supposed to be controlling how I act or who I can listen to. They're not supposed to be controlling what books people write about Christian Science. You know, they excommunicated from the church anyone that wrote a book, anyone. You couldn't write any books. You could be the most experienced healer in the world and you couldn't write a single book without their approval. And they didn't approve them. Unless they commissioned you to do it, you couldn't do it. They would excommunicate you from the church. You couldn't advertise. I mean, they tried to control you 100%. When Mary Baker Eddy passed on, they took her picture out of the book that she wrote, Science and Health. They took her picture out the very next day and republished the book. They thought getting rid of her picture was going to kill the truth. They thought it would kill her. So naive. Their first nail in the coffin to destroy themselves. I don't know if anybody's done a study of what happened to those first original board of directors, but it wouldn't surprise me if every one of them came to a tragic death, just like the disciples of Jesus, all except John, they came to a tragic death. Wouldn't surprise me at all if every one of the board of directors came to a tragic death. They took one of the finest women in the world, the finest individual in the world. I mean, she stands right along with Jesus. Look what she did. She brought back the healing capability of Christianity that had been lost for 1,500 years. She took herself out of the church and had a committee write the Bible lessons to be read, not personalities to be in there preaching as a person, but they read from books, the Bible, and Mary Baker Eddy's textbook, Science and Health. You talk about humility. She didn't even go to the churches that she built to preach, because she didn't want there to be personality involved. She would send a message to be read at an annual meeting. She didn't go. The churches were up some time before she ever even saw them. The last church was up, I think, 2 years before she ever saw it. So, whether or not you develop a life of giving is up to you. But it's going to have a direct influence on your life in everything you do. Because you're going to be looking for other people with need, and how can you help them? That's exactly what Frederick L. Rawson said we should be doing, making other people happy, period. He gave us everything. He gave us a book that has 1,315 problems in it and shows you exactly how to solve the problem in Christian Science. No one else has done that. No one. He told you how to go back in time and heal. No one has done that. Jesus didn't do that. Mary Baker Eddy didn't do that. No one else has done it. He was a genius. I express gratitude for him all the time, because I know what he did. I don't give more credence to anything I read than some of the things he's written. It's right alongside the Bible and Mary Baker Eddy's writings. He was so spiritually minded. Same with Wentworth Winslow. He healed a boy from the dead. It wouldn't surprise me if Frederick L. Rawson did. He's too humble to say it. In fact, he never related about healing that man that was covered up with the rocks. It was the other fellows looking out the window that experienced what healing that Mr. Rawson had done that put it in writing. You read his bio, Mr. Rawson's, and you'll find that there are few people that you will read a bio about of anyone in the world that matches it. Everything he did, he was excelling. Everything he did. He had his heart in the right place. A true genius to me is one that is not distracted, but finishes the job, no matter what comes their way to try to block it. That's exactly what Trump did in putting up all these beautiful luxury facilities around the world. I'm sure he had everything in the world that was trying to prevent him from getting it finished. And he said, you know, he's written several books about how to do things. The Art of the Deal is one of them. And he said that the most important project you could be working on will have the most obstacles that will try to prevent you from completing it. That's why he's so good at leading America. Because all of his life he's fought obstacles. No one that tries to attack him has even come close to facing what he has faced. They wouldn't stand up for 5 minutes against what they're dishing out. It'll be very interesting for you to monitor what you're doing and see if you're learning anything from this recording. I have no way of knowing unless you express appreciation for it. We have a message system that is totally secure. You just click on the menu and click on contact. You can send us a totally secure encrypted message. Thank you, dear Father, Mother, God, for inspiring Jesus and Mary Baker Eddy, Wentworth Winslow, Frederick L. Rawson, Robert C. Putnam. He's one of the greatest Bible scholars you'll find next to Mary Baker Eddy. And all the other ones that we mention in these recordings that I've learned so much from, that have inspired me. I'm going to close with the Diapason of Heaven, which is a short treatment that Mary Baker Eddy gave us. She gave us one for each of the seven synonymous terms in her metaphysical college, which she conducted between the years 1881 and 1898. And as she indicates right in the text, we should declare this often. And that goes with all seven of them. I would assume she means by that multiple times a day. They're short and directly to the point. Diapason of Heaven for Spirit. We must declare often that spirit is not an invisible personality inhabiting a material body. Spirit has no other meaning than God and substance. We must declare there is only one spirit, and that is God. Spirit is my God, and my God is spirit. Individual, incorporeal, immaterial. Spirit is enthroned in my consciousness. Matter and personal sense are not enthroned. We must declare these statements for ourselves in our work. Amen.